This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's Radio Free Radio.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 100.5 FM. A Canadian-Australian mining company is suing the government of El Salvador. OceanaGold is demanding $300 million in compensation unless El Salvador reconsiders its ban on mining. The company sued El Salvador after a 2009 announcement by the Salvadoran government that it would not issue metal mining permits. OceanaGold is using the World Bank to challenge the moratorium on mining. Joining us to discuss the suit is Jennifer Moore. She is the Latin America Program Coordinator for Mining Watch. She has joined me by phone. Hello, Jennifer.
Hi.
Why would the El Salvador government not issue these mining permits?
Because there is broad-based national opposition to the industry in that country. It's the smallest Central American country, largely dependent on a single watershed. And over the last decade, local mining-affected communities and their allies at the national level have learned about the terrible impacts that industrial mining could have on their water supplies and on their livelihoods. And so what has been local resistance to the company's operations in the northern part of that country, in Cabañas, in the sort of mountainous regions where the Lempa River watershed begins, has really grown to be broad-based national resistance right to the upper head of the Catholic Church. So it's put a lot of political pressure on that government to support the public interest and to put an effective moratorium on mining in the whole country.
And were there any environmental assessments or anything like that done?
Yes. I mean, the company itself had to do an environmental assessment prior to attempting to obtain a license for the El Dorado mine that was done back in 2005. The country has also undertaken a strategic evaluation of the mining sector in order to provide itself with further backing for the ongoing moratorium that's in place.
And were there any sort of requirements that the government set up that the company had to meet?
Yes. So under the Salvadoran mining law, there's quite a number of requisites that the company has to meet before it can even qualify for a permit to mine. And notably, this company, which at the time that the permit was being requested was Pacific Rim Mining. It was bailed out of near bankruptcy in October of last year by OceanaGold. And so it's suing the government, but it never actually met the regulatory requirements to obtain a license. Notably, it didn't hold land titles or even permission to mine in most of the area for which it requested a concession. Its environmental impact study, although it did submit one, was never approved. There was considerable shortcomings in it, and it also didn't submit a feasibility study to show economic viability of the mine operation. And when it failed in obtaining the permit, as opposed to going back to the drawing board and improving its environmental impact study, et cetera, it set about lobbying national government representatives, and even going as far as trying to get the support of the Bush administration and the Pope to push lobby for its interests in that country and to change the mining law to suit its application.
Now, OceanaGold has gone to the World Bank. How is it possible to launch this suit via the World Bank? What's the vehicle?
So when this suit was first launched, the company tried to go under two vehicles, and notably at the time, so this was Pacific Rim Mining that first launched the suit in 2009, it actually moved a Cayman Islands subsidiary from the Cayman Islands to the U.S. in the hopes that it could use CAFTA, the Central American Free Trade Agreement, which has provisions for corporations to sue governments in Central America when they make decisions they don't like. At the same time, it also named a national-level investment law that was installed in the 1990s under the Arena government administration of the time, very neoliberal-style law that also allows for corporations to sue the government of El Salvador for similar rationale. And the government has actually reformed that law precisely to try to avoid this type of situation in the future now. So the tribunal at the World Bank, which is called the International Center for the Settlement of Investment Disputes, or ICSID, did not permit the company to proceed with the suit under CAFTA, but has allowed the suit to proceed under the national investment law in El Salvador that has since been reformed.
And why is El Salvador bound to respect this arbitration agreement?
Because it signed on, and because it's highly dependent on the U.S. and foreign investors still today, who still wield considerable influence over its economy. So it would require some monumental effort on the part of El Salvador to actually step back from this sort of agreement, although, that said, it has reformed that national investment law successfully, so it won't, that particular vehicle for this sort of suit will not be available to corporations in the future.
And what kind of damage does the company claim that it has suffered as a result of not being able to get the permits?
I mean, it falls along the sort of lines of loss of its investment to date. It claims to have invested some $77 million in the country over the course of the time that it was operating, starting in 2002, and sort of the notion of future lost profits. So it's come up with this rather tremendous amount of $301 million that it's now trying to extort from El Salvador.
How common are these suits?
Increasingly common. Through the 1980s and 1990s, there was only 7 of these sorts of lawsuits that were launched against countries. And since 2000, as of 2013, there was about 167. Just before this one tribunal, there are other such tribunals to which corporations can go. The World Bank of all of them actually provides a list of the number of suits that are there. But it's part of a phenomena of this signing of a web of bilateral and multilateral investor protection agreements around the world under the kind of rubric of free trade. There's some 3,000 such agreements now, and we are seeing increasingly that the extractive industry sector is particularly litigious. Of those 167 suits against countries, some over 30% were filed by corporations in the oil, gas, and mining sector.
What kind of track record does the World Bank or this particular dispute tribunal have in settling these disputes? Do we know which side it generally favors?
I mean, they tend to favor corporations, but it's also important to know that the arbiters have no obligation to respect or consider legal precedent or anything that's gone before. And the way that each arbitration tribunal is set up is that the company names one arbiter, the country names another, and then a third has to be agreed on by both parties. So really, at the end of the day, the decision's being made by one person. And so one of the three on this panel, I think at some prior point in time, made a favorable decision. I think it was in an Argentinian case. And so there's a bit of hope that perhaps the decision won't be so bad. But the tendency is that they tend to favor corporate interests. So
that one person has a considerable amount of power over people's lives, it would seem.
Absolutely. I mean, the World Bank and this panel of corporate lawyers who are getting paid $6,000 a day or something of the sort should not be deciding matters of such tremendous public interest in sovereign countries like El Salvador, where people are fighting hard and fighting with their lives, putting their lives on the line. There have been at least 4 activists who've been murdered since 2009 in the Department of Cabañas, who have been prominent, outspoken leaders in the fight against mining there, and ongoing threats against people in those communities. And also, I mean, the country's already spent over $5 million just fighting this lawsuit, which could be much better spent on all sorts of social programs that would be of much better use to people in the country.
I know in Canada we've had similar lawsuits, and Canada's a fairly wealthy country, and it still strikes me as absurd. But $300 million, what does that mean to a small Central American country like El Salvador?
I mean, $300 million is a tremendous amount of money. I did recently see actually a calculation, and I don't have it in front of me, of, I mean, that's a considerable percentage, and I think it's in the range, and I'd have to double check, of 30 to 40% of national expenditure, annual expenditure. So you can just imagine the range of things that could be going toward. I mean, El Salvador, not only, you know, does it have high rates of poverty and need considerable infusion of investment in its social programs, health and education, etc., it's also highly vulnerable to the impacts of climate change. And on a fairly regular basis suffers tremendous storms and needs investment for disaster control, etc. So I think the economic impacts are considerable, and should the impacts of negative funding for El Salvador be felt, we hope that it will not sway the government toward reverting its decision in terms of issuing mining permits. It's not 100% clear what the impacts would be in terms of that public policy decision. The government of El Salvador really has been, in a very meaningful way, supportive of the broad social movement against mining, and there's considerable consciousness in the country about what the implications would be of that industry opening up. So we hope that it wouldn't be enough to sway decisions in that regard, but that stands to be seen too.
You've mentioned the resistance to this project within El Salvador. What can people in Canada or around the world do to resist not only this particular lawsuit, but also the trade agreements which make these lawsuits possible?
Well, in solidarity with the people of El Salvador this month, people are demonstrating. There was a demonstration this week in Toronto in front of OceanaGold's offices on King Street. There's going to be considerable demonstrations in Washington in front of the World Bank on Monday, with a lot of solidarity from Salvadoran diaspora communities. And there's an online Some of Us petition that's been circulated that over 160,000 people have now signed, and a number of solidarity letters, etc., that are going out. I think all of those are deeply appreciated by folks in the movement in El Salvador. But I think we do fundamentally need to question this model that I believe just on Friday, if I'm not mistaken, that the Canadian government ratified the agreement, the investor protection agreement with China, and this last year too ratified the convention that now says that the convention for this tribunal at the World Bank, which means that the rules that corporations will follow when they sue Canada for decisions that they don't like here will follow the rules of that World Bank tribunal, which are completely unfavorable. We need to dismantle the model at the end of the day. We need not to be signing more of these types of agreements. We need to actually be getting out of them. And you've already referred to the fact that Canada's also been sued by corporations. And right now there's a corporation, Lone Pine, that's suing Quebec for having put a moratorium on fracking. I think it was instituted at the municipal level, and so the province is being sued for that. And I think, we really need to have much broader understanding of the devastating impacts of this kind of corporate control over democratic decision-making in the public interest that's going to affect all of our well-being now and in the future.
Well, Jennifer, thanks so much for joining us and shedding a bit of light on this all-too-murky process.
Thanks very much for your interest.
I've been speaking with Jennifer Moore. She is the Latin America Program Coordinator for Mining Watch. To learn more about this case, you can go to miningwatch.ca.